You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudet. Almost 2 weeks after the election, the dissection of the results continues as we wait on the results of several races, including two Georgia runoffs that will determine control of the U.S. Senate come January. But one thing is clear. President-elect Joe Biden has won both the popular vote and the Electoral College. So who was in this coalition of voters to get him over that finish line, and who wasn't? Some folks in the national media are pointing to what they see as a surprising turn toward President Trump among the Latino population. Quote, "the Latino vote" is a refrain used by political pundits, polling experts, even some journalists. But what is this so-called Latino vote? Is it even accurate to use this phrase? And what are we missing when we lump so many diverse groups under one umbrella? Well, today we have four guests who will help us get into all of this. Nicole Foy is an Idaho Statesman reporter. Ruby Mendez-Mota is with the ACLU of Idaho. Jennifer Martinez is a Boise-based community organizer. And Antonio Hernandez is with Conservation Voters for Idaho. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Nicole, I want to start with you because the day after the election, you retweeted this from another Latina journalist. So the tweet is, quote, "it's laughable that in 2020, this country still needs to be reminded, Sesame Street style, that Latinos are not a monolith and the Latino vote is a mirage. This misconception comes from how little you bother knowing us, how superficially you cover us, and how absent we are in newsrooms." Unquote. You also, Nicole, tweeted that campaigns and journalists have made this mistake a lot of times before. So can you tell us more about why this idea of a single issue Latino vote is frankly wrong?
Yeah, well, and to make clear, like that first tweet you mentioned came from a really wonderful LA Times reporter who covers Latinos for the LA Times, and that's mm-hmm. the reason why she was expressing so much frustration over this, is that this is something that maybe a lot of Latino activists, you know, Latino journalists, they get, and it's not necessarily something that is reflected maybe across the wider media in the sense that there is not one quote unquote typical Latino. They're you know, made up of several countries, depending on where people live in the United States could affect mm-hmm. their vote, their faith, their income level. There's all of this nuance. And some of the, like, I think it's fair to say there was a lot of backlash largely from Latino journalists and activists and pundits against this idea of classifying it as the Latino vote, because generally we know that there is nuance there, but for some reason Latino voters aren't really afforded the same nuance as white voters are. You don't assume that white voters are going to go one way or the other, and yet there is this assumption for Latino voters, and then there's this shock when they do something that apparently they're not supposed to do.
So Ruby, Antonio, Jennifer, I'd be curious about your thoughts on this reaction to this idea of a monolithic Latino vote, because Nicole brings up a good point, right? I think there is a misnomer that if you're a Latino, well, then you must be, you know, a Democrat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is Ruby. I would definitely like to add on what Nicole said. And it's true, like, the Latinx community, we're made up of very, very different kind of backgrounds, national origin, generational, language, class, gender identity, of course, of where we live. And so, like, putting us all into one and saying that we're going to vote a certain way is a huge mistake. And honestly, very offensive, because if you really think about, like, it, how it works, it's the lack of cultural awareness, right? The lack of cultural mm-hmm. awareness of who we are, what are we, how are we supposed to react to a certain way, and how are we supposed to vote? And oftentimes when, you know, folks reach out to the Latinx community, they think, oh, just by providing Spanish materials or just doing something in Spanish is more than enough. And it's not. And it really comes down to the actual people on the ground, right? The people that are from the Latinx community and actually having real conversations with these communities that is actually producing and encouraging folks out to go out and vote.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's fair to point out that we rarely hear phrases like, you know, quote, the white vote. I mean, even after an election back in 2016, if we know that a larger share of white women voted for President Trump. So, Jennifer, I'm curious, what do you think is going on here?
I want to echo a lot of what Nicole and Ruby have said. It is a lack of cultural awareness. And honestly, I think it's a lack of necessity of folks thinking that they need our communities to turn out and vote for them. They're doing the bare minimum and expect that to yield great results. When in reality, they're not paying attention to, as Ruby said, the folks on the ground, the folks who are in community doing organizing, who are listening to the needs of folks, and really taking into account the various life experiences that lead folks to react in very different ways, depending on what their country of origin might be, or how many generations they've been in this country, or even what part of the country they're living in, right? Oftentimes when we're talking about the Latino vote, folks automatically think of places that are urban, mm-hmm. in coastal cities, et cetera, and don't really take into account Latinos who live in places like Idaho, and not even in, I'm not even thinking like Canyon County, I'm thinking of folks who live in the small towns like Aberdeen, who live in small places like Burley or Hanson, who are having a very different experience than folks who live in more urban centers. So I do believe that if folks are serious about actually having a representative democracy, they need to engage in conversations and they need to engage in authentic relationships. Because like you said, we don't talk about other groups, especially the majority group, you know, the quote unquote mm-hmm. white vote. We don't refer to them that way. We offer them the ability to have nuance and to have conversation in depth and, you know, to also defend themselves if they get lumped into a group, right? As we've seen with, you mentioned the white women voting for Trump in greater numbers. So I think that it just needs to be a real conversation and really prioritizing what it is we're trying to do, whatever political affiliation you might be coming with. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, Jennifer, what's interesting too, you brought up this idea of like, right, where people live and in parts of the country. And Nicole and Ruby, you mentioned the same thing. I think what seemed to really kind of throw pundits and, you know, and pollsters for a loop was you take the Miami-Dade area in Florida, and that Cuban Americans voted quite heavily for President Trump, which ultimately allowed him to take Florida in the Electoral College. I was a news anchor in Florida. I was not surprised by that at all, but I lived there and I got to know Cuban Americans. And so, Jennifer, do you think part of that plays into it, right? This whole idea of if you don't know, you don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I was not shocked by that at all. You know, I was kind of expecting that to be really how the vote came out of Miami-Dade and for the Cuban American community specifically, because of their experience, you know, because of where they're coming from, mm-hmm. because, you know, the far right was using words like socialism and communism, which, you know, is a really big factor in the reason a lot of Cuban Americans or Cubans have come from, you know, their country to live in the United States of America. And so if you're clued in and if you're paying attention, that wasn't a shock. But for folks who just assume that Cubans and Mexicans and Guatemalans and people from El Salvador and people from Argentina, that we're all the same, are missing a really big piece of the puzzle, right? I'm still shocked when people, you know, when you say Latino or Latinx and people automatically think that means Mexican. And that's not right. The case at all. People really need to like look at a map and look at the vastness of Latino America and how many countries and how diverse it is to really understand, you know, that nuance in the spectrum of American politics.
And Antonia, I want to bring you into the conversation because there's this idea that some folks were voting against their own interests by voting for President Trump. And this is usually in the context of the president's record on immigration. But it's not as though immigration is the only issue that that concerns Latinx voters. I mean, if we look just in Idaho, right, it comes to the issues that they're concerned about. And so I'm curious how that translates into voting for one candidate over another. But again, there's that monolithic idea of, well, they should think a certain way about immigration.
Well, that's really interesting. When I stepped into this work, I had the opportunity to meet with Idaho Latinx leaders who have been doing this work for a long time. And something that doesn't get talked about enough is how Latinx women have led and continue to lead this work. You know, I'm here with Jennifer, Ruby, Nicole, and yourself, who have been doing so much to bring fairness and justice for Idahoans. Shout out to Frankie Barnhill as well. And in those conversations, we often talk about the challenges and opportunities in ensuring Idaho's Latinx communities are better represented at the ballot box, and more specifically, more meaningfully engaged outside of just the election cycle. And so here in Idaho, Idaho's Latinx community is rarely meaningfully engaged, if ever, by any political party, especially, you know, outside of that election cycle. And what we're hearing from Latinx voters when we engage with them is a diverse amount of information and perspectives. Some notable things about the issues important to Idaho's Latinx population: education is a very important issue. This was especially noticeable when CVI engaged in our census work through Contamos Idaho Census for the 2020 census. There's also a deep sensitivity to climate change and the environment to an overwhelming number of Idahoans of Latinx descent, as well as access to jobs and a living wage. And it may not be surprising, considering we have a large population of agricultural workers and descendants who originate from Latin America. Mm-hmm. But instead, the assumption is that immigration is always the most important issue, which can be for many. But for example, in my family, we didn't discuss immigration at the dinner table. It was more about how we were going to pay the bills, how to keep food on the table, which then leads to conversations around education and meaningful employment.
So I think this goes to this excerpt that I want to play before we go to a break. It's from the Daily Podcast. This is an exchange between the host, Michael Barbaro, and reporter Nate Cohn, who helped lead the New York Times polling efforts this election. So let's listen to this real quick.
I think this is a place where reporting on the ground will be really helpful. Mm-hmm. The polls struggle with Latino voters. You know, in a national survey, you only get 100 Latino voters. It's difficult to amass a lot of Latino respondents to do the kind of deep dives that we can do on larger subgroups like white voters, for instance, who I'm sure we'll get to. As a general framing point, I would say that this election was about Donald Trump. It was a referendum on the president. Joe Biden did everything he could to make sure it was about the president. He stayed in his basement, as the Trump campaign often noted. And so I am inclined to assume that when we see big shifts, that it reflects attitudes about the president, not Joe Biden.
So we should read into this that the president successfully appealed over the last year or so to this group of voters.
That's right.
So, Nicole, I know you listened to this episode. I listened to it as well. And I'd like to hear your reaction to this idea that it's just so difficult to get accurate polling on Latino voters.
Yeah, that was really like, I listened to the Daily. I enjoy the Daily. But that was kind of like an out-of-body experience to hear that. Mostly because the New York Times itself has some really... has done some really fantastic already reporting on the ground about from really fabulous Latinx reporters about why Latinos were voting the way that they were, and what and the other thing too is that idea of, you know, we just can't find people
right
to poll. I mean, I think the question is that, like, you know, you may need to hire some different people, because it's not like Latinos are like these like invisible people you only catch between like, you know, noon and 1 o'clock. You know, it was really mind-boggling to me that to hear that from the New York Times, that has all of the resources in the world and also reporters who clearly were able to find Latino voters who eloquently described for one reason or the other why they were voting the way they were. And yet for some reason, we can't get that into polling. I mean, you see that, like, you know, I'm sure that, you know, everyone else, you know, on this with me can tell even more stories about how usually that just means people aren't trying hard enough.
Right. We do need to take a quick break. We are going to continue our conversation about the diversity of values and politics within the Latino community. So stay with us. More Idaho Matters next. You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudet. And if you are just joining us, we are learning about the diversity of values and politics within the Latino community and how the media and political campaigns can frankly do a better job understanding this growing community. Our guest today, Nicole Foy, is an Idaho Statesman reporter. Ruby Mendez-Mota is with the ACLU of Idaho. Jennifer Martinez is a Boise-based community organizer. And Antonio Hernandez is with Conservation Voters for Idaho. Jennifer, according to the Pew Charitable Trust, only 8.1% of eligible voters in Idaho are Hispanic. But in certain counties, including Canyon County and in the Magic Valley around the Twin Falls area, we know that these communities are quite significant and they are growing. So I'm curious, as a community organizer, what do you think about the future when it comes to seeing this community to continue to grow here in our state, but then also, how could that affect local politics?
Oh man, I'm really excited for this question. I think that the future is full of possibilities for what we could see in terms of Latinx representation across Idaho, especially across South Central and Southeast Idaho. Like you mentioned, you know, places like Canyon County have a high number of, you know, Latinx residents who are a voting age population. But when we look at percentage-wise, like how much of the community do they make up? We have a lot of opportunities in places like the Magic Valley, you know, Twin Falls County, Lincoln County, Clark County, Bonneville. There are places where, you know, I think, I truly believe that if we engaged in community organizing that really centers the Latinx community, that encourages them to run for office and prepares them for that, we could flip legislative districts, we could flip city councils, we could flip county commission seats. But the work hasn't been invested by either political party really at this point. And so I think that there is a lot of hope. If we also look at the average age of Latinos in Idaho, you know, is 24. Nationally, the average age for Latinos is 29. And the average age for the non-Hispanic population in Idaho is like 38. And 40% of our population here in Idaho, you know, it's under the age of, I believe, 20. So we have a lot of young people who are going to become, you know, a voting age in the near future and in the distant future. And I think that's going to speak volumes in terms of who's running, who we're electing, and who is representing us at all levels of government in Idaho.
And Ruby and Antonio, same question for you. I mean, what do you think about the future when it comes to seeing the Latinx community grow here in Idaho?
Well, this is Ruby. I think it's growing, right? Like our community organizers, where political campaigns fail to do the robust outreach, it's our grassroots organizers that are ones filling the void or that are doing the work. And so the work is already happening where we're not just only mobilizing voters, but we're mobilizing the whole Latinx community, right? Because we have to understand that a lot of families also have mixed statuses. So it's not only mobilizing those that have the privilege to vote, but those that don't, and around issues that they care about and around things that they would like to mobilize around. And being able to organize them in a very cultural relevant way, things that resonate with them, and not only in the language, but also in the way that they live, in the way that they see the world here and how they made Idaho their home. And so there's power in community, and I definitely agree, like the local level is, it's definitely where it's at, and especially in rural organizing, where there's a lot of pockets of community that are usually forgotten because they are not close to the Treasure Valley. And so it's really focusing and being able to provide the resources and mobilizing folks in order for us to see this large turnout of individuals not only coming out to the polls, but also being involved in within Idaho politics.
And Antonio, your thoughts? Yeah.
I think that question is, in this conversation, is a really good reminder that one, there's a failure to engage Idaho's Latinx community in a meaningful way historically. And then two, who is Idaho's Latinx community? We are the backbone of Idaho's agricultural industry. We are Idaho's healthcare workers. We are Idaho's teachers. We are Idaho's families. And we are Idaho's future. And so it is beyond time for our community to be better understood and be better engaged and meaningfully encouraged to share in our policies and in our politics.
So, Nicole, in the first segment, we touched on the Cuban American community in the Miami-Dade area of Florida, and they went strongly for President Trump. And, you know, I mean, that is attributed, right, to his antisocial stance. And given Cuban Americans' views on communism, you can, you know, if you take some time, you can actually understand that. So you report, around the Latinx community here in Idaho. So does ethnicity or the history of politics in a person's country of origin play a role in how the Latinx community in Idaho votes? And if that's a no, what factors are more important?
I feel like this might be something that my co-guests might be better able to answer. But something that's interesting about Idaho's community is that, unlike, you know, many other states, is that primarily a good percentage of our Latinos here in Idaho are of Mexican descent. So like that, you know, that they may be different from, you know, states like California that will mm-hmm. have a lot of people from a lot of different countries. But something that I think is really interesting about Idaho, and that I wish is one of the things that really does tend to personally annoy me in the coverage when it comes to when we're talking about groups of voters, is that Idaho's Latino voters are rural voters. Like they live in agricultural areas. And yet usually when we're talking about, like, we talk about this like urban rural divide, like it's kind of this idea that we're only talking about white people in farmland. Hmm. Whereas like most of Idaho's Latino community lives in these areas, not really an urban based community. And also too, like, you can kind of take that anywhere. I mean, Latino voters are suburban voters. Like, they're, you know, it's not really, usually when we're using these phrases, we just mean it to code for white. And that doesn't really make sense, because like Latinos live in the suburbs, they live in the cities, they live in, and in Idaho, they increasingly live in rural areas. And so I think they should be engaged along those issues. I mean, I think in my opinion, many Latinos are very driven in one political party or the other by faith. I mean, like that's a very common thread. And so whether that's, you know, you could see that in a lot of the reporting that was showing how many, you know, some, a lot of evangelical Latinos were really being pushed towards voting for Trump because of stances on abortion, whereas others, and same with the Catholic community, whereas that may not have been the case for everyone who are people of faith. So, I mean, it's kind of like all of these different, I guess, kind of trigger points, I don't know if that's the right word, that we, again, allow that nuance to other groups of voters, but we don't necessarily allow to Latino voters. And that is usually where you get lost.
And Antonio, I know in your work, you do a lot of voter outreach to members of the Latino community. When it comes to voting, though, what barriers are Latinx voters facing here in our state?
You know, if we want to create an environment where Latinx voters feel welcome to the voting process, we have to be comfortable with creating Spanish materials. Highlighting Nicole Foy's reporting from 2018, we saw that bilingual poll workers were being told they could not speak Spanish at the polls in Canyon County. As many of you know, Canyon County has one of the largest Latinx populations in the state. And we can also look to what's happening in Lincoln County. They reluctantly had limited Spanish materials available on their website only about a month before the election happened in 2018. And those materials were then removed in 2019. A quick reminder, Lincoln County is legally required to provide election information to voters in the county. And when those materials were reintroduced in 2020 for the general election, only about 1 month again before the election date, they were full of mistranslations, grammatical errors. And what does this say about how Idaho values our Latinx population? it would be outrageous to suggest that English speakers would get voter registration forms or absentee ballot forms that are full of errors. This is just one example of how Latinx voters are not only being overlooked and forgotten, but are also being dissuaded from participating in our elections.
So I'd like to hear from all of you on this. I mean, we know that talking about a single, you know, monolithic Latino vote is just false. So what do you think would be a better way to frame this conversation? And I ask this because let's go back, you know, to 2016, right? Where we talked about, you know, more suburban white women voted for Trump. Well, I know from a personal standpoint, I don't like being lumped into the white female vote, right? And that's only because it feels very one note, I guess, is the best way I can describe it. So Ruby, I'll just start with you. I mean, your thoughts on how we make we better frame this conversation.
Well, I definitely think that more Latinx individuals need to be brought to the table, right? With different experiences. Like, we can't tokenize just one person for just being Latinx and have that one person be the solution to providing the recommendations. I think more Latinx folks need to be represented at the table when it comes to reaching out to the Latino and Latinx vote. But more than anything, I think it's just not to underestimate the Latino vote and being able to just consider us as voters, right? And how can you approach us in the way that's more relevant to us individually and as a community? And right, what are those communities asking for? Listening and actually hearing us out in the needs and what can we bring to the table as well?
And Antonia, your thoughts?
You know, we are talking about people who are more than the box they check when someone asks their demographic information. So it's important that we also ask Latinx voters directly what their main issues are, what values are important to them, and what barriers they are facing when participating in our democracy. And a big key to that is to hire Latinx folks to do this work, like Ruby said. There's a whole world of experiences and perspectives that people who come from Latinx backgrounds can illustrate, everything from differences between how Spanish speakers, Spanglish speakers, bilingual, monolingual people get information to generational differences of assimilation and privilege. There's so much to unpack. The least we can do is hire someone who has the cultural sensitivity, competency to engage in a meaningful way with our Latinx communities.
And Jennifer?
Yeah, I want to echo everything that my colleagues have said, and also just naming that when hiring people from community, making sure you're hiring people who are from the areas, right? Organizing and community feels very different in South Central Idaho versus Canyon County versus other parts of the state. You know, as someone who grew up in Gooding County and my family still spread out across the Magic Valley, it's just a very different experience. So I think that is crucial. And additionally, like Antonio said, having conversations and really listening to what community is telling you they need, and not cherry picking, right? Like, oh, they mentioned immigration here, let's only talk about this. Like, we are nuanced and diverse, and we have opinions that span the spectrum. So really authentically listening and hearing, and then taking action on what it is that you're hearing that community might need in terms of policy changes or rule changes. And specifically for people who are trying to engage in the political spectrum on whatever side of the partisan aisle you might be on, truly, you know, engaging the community at every level of campaign and political work, whether it's campaign workers, whether it's candidates themselves, whether it is people who are running parties, whether it's people who are organizers on the ground, precinct captains, and across various organizations, really ensuring that you're centering community within that. And lastly, I'll end with having this conversation constantly. I'm glad we're having this conversation now, and this conversation should be something that happens even when there is not an election coming up as big as the presidential one that we just came out of. This needs to be an ongoing effort, not just something that pops up, you know, the last 2 months before a November election, you know, during a midterm or during a presidential, because that's just not how it works, and that's not how relationships are built, and that's not how power is built. So this needs to be an ongoing conversation, and I hope that folks listening really commit to the work that needs to happen between now and the elections that are coming up in 2021 and 2022 to really make a difference.
Well, I want to thank all of you for joining us and for having this conversation. I do hope that it does make a difference and that we continue to have this conversation. We've been talking with reporter Nicole Foy, with the Idaho Statesman, Ruby Mendez-Mota from the ACLU of Idaho, Jennifer Martinez, a Boise-based community organizer, and Antonio Hernandez with Conservation Voters for Idaho. Thank you all. More Idaho Matters next.